Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 17th of September, 2020, and we are post FOMC meeting, just having a discussion about what on earth was it that was said at this meeting that is causing such a negative market reaction. And I've said before on the podcast, and I believe this is the case to a degree this time as well, is that sometimes you just need to have a big event risk out of the way before the market is going to do what it was doing anyway. And we also have to remember, I mean, we just saw a huge market sell-off, Peter. We had a few days of consolidation, but it was a very significant adjustment lower we saw. And if you know, Elliott wave terms, whatever you want to say, there was the risk all the time if we didn't fully erase that sell-off, that we're going to see at some scale of continuation wave lower. And we're certainly heading into interesting areas here as we look at the NASDAQ 100 levels around 11,000 and the nominal lows just below that. Anything else you want to talk about with yesterday's session? Noticing as well up here, the selling in the S&P is less so during cash session yesterday, but overnight, also the broader market looking pretty weak.
Yeah, the broader market did in fact look weak. And we have it on slide one, the NASDAQ 100 index. I think we've touched upon it. I was sort of building I was building a narrative and a case for a rebound. It looked well until yesterday, and now we have had two days or two sessions, it looks like, with a sell-off. I think the 10,930 area will be a level extremely key in the NASDAQ 100. That's the rebound from a week ago on two occasions. So we have to look for that level. Doesn't really seem like there's a lot of action or a lot of positive sentiment in equities for now. So it looks more and more likely that the strong rebound is off the table and will be in a more sideways market as we are waiting the Q3 earnings, which will start in around mid-October. And we'll have a couple of weeks of those earnings impacting the market before I think the election will take full control of price action. So interesting session today. Let's see what happens. Obviously, there's not all parts of the equity market that were selling off. We had pockets of extremely red-hot action, but we'll get back to that in a few minutes.
Yeah, in terms of technical targets, just for my two cents, if we are seeing a continuation wave lower, we can look at various things. You can look at the A, B equals C, D harmonics extension target. That's basically that the next sell-off wave equals the first sell-off wave, which would take us around, and you can see that on slide one, the 10,035 level or so. That also coincides with plus or minus about 20 or 30 points with the 38.2% retracement of the entire run-up for the COVID-19 lows. And obviously, it's also close to the big round 10,000 level. So you have that, and then you have something like the 200-day moving average coming up right around 9,500 now. So just 2 cents on that. As for the FOMC meeting itself, I mean, we knew that the Fed had just announced its massive results of its long-term policy review. It has this new average inflation targeting regime, which means it will be very slow to react to rising inflation. This statement yesterday sort of cements that. And I found the question and answer session excruciatingly boring. And it just says, what are we supposed to do with this now? Right in the here and now, we can't really do much with this policy. We have to wait for something to be challenged, the Fed's resolve to be challenged on the upside or the downside before the Fed even becomes relevant. So if we have disinflationary pressures, you could argue the Fed is totally irrelevant, and it's really up to the fiscal side of things to bring in more forceful policymaking. If we do see inflation coming back, what if it comes back before the unemployment rate is down to where the Fed wants it? What if we have 3% inflation and 6% unemployment? Then you're talking about a brutally ineffective forward guidance, because they would be forced, I would suspect, in such a stagflationary regime, to avoid such punishing negative real rates, to start raising rates anyway, regardless of the level of unemployment. That's all for the distant future for now. The market's selling the fact, whether this was the fact that they're selling off, and the FOMC is, establishing an interesting long-term framework that's going to bring its own challenges, and they'll be tripping over this forward guidance, is my suspicion down the road.
We had a very interesting internal call in our team, John, with our great colleagues around the world, and I think Steen, our chief for the team, actually had a very good point on, which actually goes back to strategy in general in life, that I mean, the more random you are, the more unpredictable and the more value your different moves has, and that's the problem with the Fed here, with committing to low interest rates and curve being pricing that out to 2023, it makes the entire Fed and monetary policy extremely important because it's so predictable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's self-defeating in many ways. And then, so that's where we are. I think we are left with hoping for productivity gains to come back in the private sector and then a fiscal muscle that can hopefully help as well. But I don't think we'll get much more help from the monetary side here.
There's also in that internal discussion, and I think a key point as well from a portfolio composition perspective, that this idea that 60-40 portfolio is dead, the combination of equities and bonds, because one thing you're noticing here, we're selling off pretty badly. You're not seeing an offset of that in a treasury market that is rallying. Yes, the yields are nominally very slightly lower, a basis point or two, but that is without that compensation, I think you have some really big structural challenges out there in portfolio composition and how you deal with this kind of a market regime going forward. A long-term topic, this is a daily podcast, but just watching that interactivity, I think is an interesting thing. Let's go back to some incoming data. We had the NAHB housing market index essentially showing in this K-shaped market recovery narrative, that is the folks that are already have assets and have retained their jobs, generally at the upper end, are doing better than ever. They're seeing the lowest mortgage rates ever in the U.S., and we're seeing record super hot housing market, at least for new housing, which is what this survey measures. Record high there beyond what we were seeing during the housing bubble in 2005. Just remarkable stuff. At the same time, at the lower end, I'm not sure things are doing well. And we saw the retail sales quite disappointing. And the revisions for July as well were considerably lower. There's even the so-called control group that they measure that saw a slight contraction in August. So losing some steam there, even though the great growth rate, broadly speaking, for retail sales was positive. And then I put in here as well, I'm going to skip a couple of your slides here, Peter. I just wanted to point this out. No. I find it interesting. These weekly gasoline implied demand numbers are quite interesting to me to follow, at least on a moving average basis. And we've had a couple of very weak numbers over the last couple of weeks. We are post Labor Day in the U.S. where the driving, the amount of driving does fall. But still, seeing this slip below the 9 million barrels per day, you can see it on slide 5. One thing I like to track for just sort of activity on the ground in the U.S. Europe, we were talking about potential upside breakout in Europe this morning, but just the weight of this sudden sell-off in the U.S., it has to be, it obviously is carrying through to a degree to Europe today. I guess it'll be key to see if it's enough to get it to break the downside of this very tight range.
It sure. We talked about it yesterday, and as I said, I was building this rebound narrative. It got completely destroyed, at least for now. We're still in a very tight trading range in European equities. It seems very much like, again, as well this morning with the price action, that Europe and the US equity market is decoupling in an interesting way. The direction might be the same occasionally on some days, but the magnitude is far from each other, and we see that as well today. But again, very tight range. That's on slide 3 where you can see the European price action. On slide 4, it's just a... That's just one of the charts I put in my research note, which you can read on analysis.saxo from yesterday, where I just showed 32 cases going back to 1991 with the ZEW, the survey among industry leaders in German industry on the economic growth expectations. And as long as that index is above 60 and you have a positive month-on-month reading, you have 32 cases of those. I looked at how was the price performance in European equities in the subsequent 2 months of trading, and it did almost 4% gain there. So that was what I built my narrative on, but it doesn't look very good today.
Well, to today specifically, we'll see what happens. You've got a bit of time frame there to work with. I thought it was an interesting story. We talked about Adobe yesterday, and it had a very strong set of results, beating on earnings and revenue. And the stock did gap higher on the open. But looking at slide 6, you can see that this is a microcosm of the market here. Here's a great company that's done reported some great results, and it just the top price was the opening price of the day, and the closing price of the day was the low price. Just a really ugly, pointing to supportive fundamentals and terrible price action. At least in these very highly valued, high momentum stocks, I think it could be in for some dicey sessions.
That as well. But also then I think management opened a little door to weakness that was not anticipated by investors. Because as we talked about yesterday as well, John, Adobe has a very big footprint in the creative part of the economy. And that part of the economy has certainly been crushed with the COVID-19. So there's, I think there's lingering uncertainty around Adobe's business in the coming 6 months. So it could impact the prices and take this stock away from its momentum and into a more sideways price action for the next 6 months, I think.
Okay, and then in FX, we're seeing the usual suspects, the dollar and the yen perking up on the risk sentiment swing to the negative. Eurodollar in a pretty determined move, trying to take out that 117.50 level. You can see that on slide 7. It's just been such a difficult affair trying to get a proper correction going. And just before I'm coming in to make this podcast, it was trying to bounce yet again. But the euro is certainly weaker against the dollar and against the yen, where we've seen more determined action because of the upside in the Japanese yen. See that on slide 8. We saw a very significant breakdown yesterday, 124.50 area there. And the dollar yen, you can see it on the left on slide 8, looking below this 105 level. And it's never really closed below about, I think the close there, even during COVID-19 panic back in March, it's never really closed below 104.50 or so. Actually, you can't see that on that just particular chart. But if you're going back, the 104.50 area is sort of the low area on a closing basis that it's never really exceeded. So if this is starting to break down, I think it's starting to jar the market and its assumptions about the Japanese yen. What's driving the yen? Well, I think it's been very slow to react to very strong bond markets and still very low yields. It's been very slow to react to the general dollar sell-off. So needing to play some catch up there. As well, you have the big move in the Chinese currency to the upside. Some sympathy move there for Asian revaluation and the political situation with the new prime minister and whether the commitment to Abenomics policy could be weakening despite what we've seen in terms of statements issued. So that's a big move there. And it, to me, a much stronger Japanese yen equates with volatility picking up across FX. So we'll be tracking those yen pairs closely and the degree to which the dollar can keep pace. And I mentioned Eurodollar there before, something like Aussie dollar, which I'm just almost shocked that it hasn't sold off more given what's going on in equities and in some commodities. Iron ore selling off badly. There's a little copper chart we have in slide 9. It's early days of the weakening, but if we see a more significant, broader sell-off in metals, I think the sort of that reflation story and Aussie are in for at least a chunky consolidation. And then we talked a little bit as well this morning about COVID-19. There's so many unknowns out there still with this, the vaccine, et cetera. I was just looking over the case numbers, Peter, this morning. I mean, Spain registering more than 11,000 in one day. France back up towards 10,000, UK towards 4,000, despite the very strict lockdowns. They're a little bit different phase of the crisis there. You know, what are we supposed to do with this COVID-19? It's a very difficult question, but I think it still remains a big shadow over everything.
Yeah, I think the case in France is particularly worrying. Spain is actually ahead of that, but I think where it gets critical is that, like, if you look at Denmark, for instance, we've had a pretty rapid resurgence of COVID-19 cases, but where hospitalizations have really been lacking. Whereas if you look at France, and specifically in Paris, we talked about that yesterday, you're seeing hospitalization or hospital capacity being reaching almost its limits. And that's where it gets critical, I think, on the move. So that's definitely something to watch. Talking about COVID-19, I've put in on slide 10. We didn't talk about it yesterday, but FedEx, the night before, had a very, very good earnings release. As you can see there, their fiscal year Q1, which is not following the calendar year, had an earnings per share adjusted of almost $5 versus almost $2.50 expected. So it was twice as much profitability as the market expected. The price action came in yesterday. It was FedEx up 5%. So you have this company that was suffering for years. Bad management, business model was under pressure. There was definitely too much excess capacity in global logistics. They had very difficulties capturing the e-commerce growth in packages. And then suddenly COVID-19 came about. And suddenly, as you can see here, FedEx gone from $80 per share to almost $250. So there you go. Catapulted the company back into growth and good profitability. It's just one of those interesting stories out there to watch.
Ironically, of course, COVID-19 has had winners and losers, and clearly this situation in their case was a great benefit falling into their lap for all the delivery that's happening instead of action taking out and face to face in the economy.
They had their best operating margin since 2004.
And then take us through this absolutely crazy snowflake IPO.
You think it was crazy?
Well, slightly.
Okay, I've been with Saxo for 10 years, so I have seen the Facebook IPO, I've seen the Alibaba IPO, I've seen LinkedIn, I've seen some crazy stuff over the years. Snowflake is by far the most insane IPO. I'm sorry to use this language, but it is insane. So you have a company that decided together with investment banks that the initial pricing range was pretty fair, 75 to 85. Demand was shockingly high. They increased it to 100 to 110. You know, Berkshire Hathaway was all in. Salesforce Venture Fund was all in. Initially, they set for the IPO price of $120. And then when the secondary, so that was yesterday, and then when the market, the day before, and then yesterday when they opened up the market, the orders flowing into the market when it started trading, halted trading for a couple of hours, and the open was $235. Within the matter of 10, 15 minutes, it shot all the way to 319, and then in the subsequent hour, it went all the way down to 219, and then the stabilizers came in from the market makers, and they stabilized the price, and we ended at 245. And the sheer intraday volatility, I think it's not good for an IPO. This is just too insane. And it shows you the money out there that is chasing the right stories. It is the first pure play on cloud computing infrastructure. All the industry experts are really helping out, drumming up support for Snowflake as a very interesting technology that is solving a critical issue in the cloud infrastructure space. So let's see where this goes. We have another exciting IPO being priced today, which is Unity, the software platform for gaming development. I'll be writing about that, so you can read that on analysis.saxo later today, and that one will be starting trading tomorrow. So a lot of action in US IPO markets,
to say the least. And I can't remember what I saw, what the Snow market cap was by the end of trading, but you're talking about a company that had
$30 billion, I think,
has a quarterly revenue on the order of, I think it was $120-130 million for a quarter. So some interesting multiples, to say the least, there, which means you're going to have to see a lot of growth to justify that price. Let's look at today's calendar. We have an interesting Bank of England situation where they're looking at a country that suffered the worst growth hit from COVID-19 and is having to deal with the uncertainty around this end of the Brexit transition period at the end of the year. The market is pricing in a lean towards negative rate policy as we head into next year. If they sharpen that language, that could be sterling negative. Ironically, as we just saw sterling trying to rally back on the Boris Johnson softening up his stance a little bit on this Brexit bill in terms of allowing votes on before key portions of this bill would be sort of exercised. So somewhat of backing down from his stance prior to that. Regardless, sterling in very interesting place after rallying now. If it continues to rally, then we're talking about a full reversal of the recent sell-off, and then we have to be a very different situation, I think, most interestingly for euro sterling. And then we have the latest weekly claims data out of the U.S. That is always interesting as the premier high-frequency data point from the U.S. There's a South African rate announcement. The action has been really heating up in the South African rand, tracking a recent platinum resurgence. And we've just crossed below a key area in the 200-day moving average. Let's see if that sticks. You have a hard time imagining EM trades are going to stick aggressively stronger if this risk sentiment continues to deteriorate. And then we have a Bank of Japan meeting tonight in Asia. For now, it's been a long one. There's a lot to look at today. Let's see where we are with this market sell-off tomorrow with our next edition of the Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.